Hello, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the University of Sussex Business School. This is episode 48, part 3, where we continue to discuss Jakes and Stamp's 1995 text, Level and Type of Capability in Relation to Executive Organization or Stratified Systems Theory. To get the text and for more information, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. So this is part 3 of episode 48, and now we're talking about implications for research and other work, and we know we left you with a cliffhanger at the end of part 2, and now Tom's going to help us go through that cliffhanger.
Well, thanks, Ralph. What I was thinking about with time as the basis for differentiating strata, time span. What I think about is complexity, the complexity of the environment, and because the time span is associated with the decision. It's sort of like the output of a thought process. But what we really want, I would think, of individuals who are going to be brought up to higher level positions and have far greater responsibilities and authority across an organization, you would think that it's got to be a capacity issue of the ability to deal with increased complexity of the environment, increased depth of knowledge or expertise, some of these other variables that would seem to be much more descriptive and much more useful in a way than, say, time span, because that's, like I said, that's focused on the decision. That's focused on the output of what a manager might do or what a supervisor might do. So I just wanted to open that up as sort of like a question of, all right, so if we're going to suggest that we need to differentiate this or improve the theory in some way and look at strata perhaps a little bit differently, what are some of the things we would want to consider?
I think the complexity thing might be a bit problematic, especially when talking about research done empirically. Because don't forget that the stratified systems theory is a hardcore bureaucratic theory, which means that any attempts to deal with the complexity of the environment will be essentially aimed at decomplexifying the environment insofar as possible. And I'm not sure that decomplexification is a good indicator of an individual's ability to occupy this or that strata, because you're essentially measuring people on how well they can dumb down complex and nuanced information. Also, then we're kind of, it has similar issues to the original theory in that measuring capacity and ability, it's all very cognitive and it's very kind of a derivative of various psychologistic schemas of what individuals do or not. How about we just do what kind of a number of people in social science do now and just see what people do? The time span of discretion has an inbuilt element of action in it. So instead of taking that in the psychologistic direction, which is where Jax took it, partly because he was a psychologist, I believe, observing the way individuals enact their time frames and might be a more kind of effective and less biased way of understanding how people deal with the decisions and the complexity and environments and just how well they are at their job.
I think that would expand it beyond the pure cognition aspect you're talking about, Demetrius, and introduce the behavioral component. The other thing I was thinking about time span when you were talking was, I think the author's definition is perhaps too narrow, and maybe it's not a criticism of them, it's the way I read it, but when they talk about time span being easily measured as the longest task in each level, it makes it sound like something you're working on, at least that's the way I interpret it, something you're working on that might take 25 years to accomplish or something. And I think possibly my own interpretation was too narrow. I was thinking another way to look up time span is the impact of your decisions, because many people in very senior positions, they make a decision, you know, potentially very quickly or within a year or so or some number like that, that has a long-term impact on the organization. One of the things we say in the military is that if you make some tweak to the personnel system, you change the qualifications for a certain position, you change the way you bring people into the service, you change how you evaluate them, any of those kinds of things you make. What they say is that the time span of that, the impact of that decision is typically 5 to 10 years, because you're not going to change a lot of people's functioning at that very moment. You're going to change the people who come in later or who are directly affected by that, by those policies. And so that's a challenge when you're making those kind of decisions where, you know, how do you know what things are going to be like in 5 or 10 years? And in the case of weapons acquisition, so here's an example, you build a ship and you have the ship designed a certain way or making choices in ship design. In the Navy, we say those are 30-year decisions you're making, that you actually impact 80% of the lifecycle cost. That's not only the cost to buy the ship, but all the time to maintain and operate it throughout its 30 or, in the case of aircraft carriers, 50-year career. And those costs get locked in during the design process. So those are decisions, the impact of which are enormously long-standing, but you're not working on them over that time. You make the decision, and then it just ripples throughout the system. So I don't mean that as a criticism of the authors. Right, I think that was probably just the narrow way that I interpreted it.
And two things there. Impact on organization, the question there is, what do you mean by organization, and how do you measure impact on which part of it? So that's... like the first issue.
Right. Well, all of those are problematic. Yeah. No, I'm with you. There's no simple way to
and
say that.
Second one is that I don't think it's honest to suggest that decisions can be evaluated based on their future impact, in a sense that when a decision
Absolutely
is made,
not.
It's
agree.
Made retrospectively, not prospectively. So kind of if you're trying to measure something like stratas, of time span of discretion, you're not looking forward, you're looking back, because the empirical observation of a decision-making process is very much retrospective. It's considering past precedents, it's considering factors that exist now and have existed previously. It's somewhat of a fantasy to suggest that a decision is made.
I agree.
Thinking of the 80% of the future lifespan of a product or an implication of the decision.
Well, I'm not sure you can be quite that have the boundary quite that hard. I think you have a point. You know that you don't know, but we have, in the case of ship design, we have some models that tell us. If you go down some of these paths of decision making, which is retrospective, as you said, it can have enormous impacts. And I also agree with you. I think that was a great point, that you can't know what the future is going to be like in 25 years. Even 5 years is a ridiculously long period of time in many situations. And so I'm not saying that you know how to make those decisions. I'm just saying you're in a position where you're making decisions that will have that impact. You don't know what it will be, just like you said, but they are going to have that kind of impact.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of add that it's more than just decision as the tail end of a rational process, but it's also the manner in which the decision is made. And this is where I'm going to come back on the discussion you had, Demetrius, about decomplexification, because I'm probably going to use complexity a little bit different than you are. So just, you know, forewarning. But when I think about the capacity of a leader to affect good decisions, it's not just, you know, the rational side of it. It's also the socialization. It's the setting the stage or setting the conditions by which the decision is accepted and stands the highest chance of being enacted. And this kind of gets to pages 44 through 45, about how in the later parts they sort of describe the attributes of leadership. Jakes and Stamp describe the attributes of leadership and the impact that they have on the organization. And these are definitely things that I don't think you could really measure in a time span fashion. It's about social cohesion. It's about understanding the necessary organizational context, being able to articulate vision. So if you have a capable leader, they are capable of communicating the decision before the decision is effectively made. They build the consensus, they lay the groundwork, they deal with stakeholders, and then by the time that the decision is made, any questions or resistance or what have you are either muted or addressed so that the organization can then move forward. And in that regard, time span is sort of like the minimum, you know, you minimize the amount of time it would take for the decision to be enacted, as opposed to, say, in something a little bit more complex and not properly communicated, where it should only take a year to do, but winds up being five because of all of the leftover issues associated with making the decision and the wreckage of relationships along the way.
Exactly. So I return to my point from part one, which is, in part, the theory is very much insisting on the issue of abstraction and, you know, individual, whatever. But actually, when we go and unpack, you know, all the things that Tom were talking about, the capability of the leader has to do with the ability of being relational, of, you know, understand the context. All the stuff we talk about, the temporal boundaries that might exist when you have people from different time horizons, you know, from a different strata in this case, having to work together, then you have the issue of being able to understand, create common ground, which are all relational skills. So again,
and the other thing I was thinking about is Tom was describing the attributes for the section starts with main conditions for effective military leadership. Struck me as Tom was talking about that is those are all the social, behavioral, sociological, and subjective features that the model precisely leaves out. They're not about decision making. Yes. Right? Pedro saw the same thing. Look at this and I say, well, wait a minute now. These are none of the things your model is addressing. And when you have these people giving these interviews and using these phrase cards and this sorting task, I'm thinking, where are these things in there? So it's a puzzle to me about why you would say, okay, well, this is my vision of military leadership, and yet my theory doesn't really even address this. And we intentionally, the authors, Jackson and others, intentionally abstracted them from an abstract theory. And I was thinking, well, where is that going to get you?
But how tempting is it to think of an ability to design an organization along the individual time spans of discretion so that every person occupies a level of decision making to which they are most naturally suited? That's a very seductive thing.
I think it's very seductive, just like you were going to, just like you said, because if you're wedded to the one best way approach to management or organizational design, this is incredibly seductive. And you can see the authors. I always cringe when I see this stuff in writing where they say, well, it's a scientific technique to design organizations. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, if you abstract all of that, those behavioral components and then say the things that you just, that mattered for organizational leadership at the very high levels aren't part of your model, it makes things quite a bit easier.
Yeah. I mean, this is the ultimate contingency theory, right?
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of contingency theory, and maybe it's not related, but it's about complexity, and we can come back to contingency, but okay. So regarding complexity, because both Tom and Demetrius referred to that, I was thinking there is an aspect of simplifying that is incredibly useful at high levels of leadership. And that is, if you can boil down some aspects of a complex situation into some basic principles or fundamental ideas that don't oversimplify, and that's the challenge, right? How do you simplify without going too far and then losing the appropriate nuance? That is an incredibly valuable skill by senior leaders. Tom was talking about the importance of that social work that senior leaders do to help people understand the decision before it's locked in stone and before you're implementing it, so you can get input, you can get people work through their resistance and concern with the change. And if you can't always explain to people in the settings that you're given all the complexities that go into the decision that you've made. So you do have to do some level of abstraction. And I think the risk is clearly oversimplifying, where then you take things that you create principles with this oversimplification that means it's no longer really what you're talking about anymore. You're talking about something different because you've simplified it too much. But I will tell you, as a senior leader, you don't get long periods of time to explain stuff to people. And so sometimes some simplification is important. And a quick anecdote here, and I know the Army's got some equivalent of this, but in the Navy, what we used to say is, look, if you're going to ask a flag officer to help you or do something or understand some complex issue you're dealing with, you have to imagine that you're explaining it with crayons, because that's the level that he's dealing with. Because he's got many, many, many other things going on. But he does have this grasp of the higher levels of the organization and complexity and those kinds of things. So you'd like to think, okay, I can give him the crayon version of this, and he'll get enough of it right in his particular role that he'll be an ally. But there are times when you do the crayon version and it goes off in another direction and it doesn't go well at all for you. So that depends obviously on the individual leader.
There's another thing that you just touched on, Ralph, that I think is an important consideration when we're assessing someone at their strata level, is the ability to swap in and out of decision spaces. What I witnessed personally of a senior commander, military commander's day, in which typically have about 20 to 25 events. I mean, I'm really guessing here, but it felt like 20 to 25 events by the time it was done. And each event, you know, a meeting, a conference, a speech, or something like that, each represented its own decision space. And you had matters of moments or minutes in which you had to disengage from one decision space and move to another and be able to do so seamlessly, so that the moment that your next meeting started, you were in the game. You know, there was and I think that there were definitely leaders who I've been with who were better at that than others. Others who perhaps needed a lot more white space in between events to be able to, you know, decompress and leave the last event behind and move on to the next event. Little things like that, which really do make a big difference in terms of the relationships that you build with people inside and outside of the organization. So I'm not just talking about decision space of meeting folks inside the organization, but meeting, you know, maybe you're meeting with one division here and then some external contractor there and then a political leader here. And then, you know, I mean, this is really significantly different decision spaces you're moving in and out of, which is a capacity all its own.
I wanted to return to something that Dimitris was hinting at, which kind of, you know, touched on these two points, which is this idea of the tempting, how tempting it is to try to design this kind of model or, I mean, theory or framework that it kind of, you know, is able to take account of the capacity of individuals and actually plot them within the organization. And some of the examples, you know, and the stories that both you, Ralph, and Tom were talking about is exactly the, you know, when the rubber hits the road in the coal phase, when things really happen, how it gets more complicated and so on and so forth. But I wanted to say something appreciative about the SSST, which is there is something almost anti-Tayloristic about this overall enterprise, which is this idea of trying to place people and their abilities within some specific kind of organization design, and one that in a way almost tries to go beyond just looking at the task and the fitting in the structure and the position, but actually on think of the task as a more like ecological way of, you know, as we talked before. So if you think about it, Taylorism is very much about tightening the people into the task, but it almost seems that this one is trying to revert that and build on the individual skill. And of course, we can discuss whether it resides on the cognition or not and blah, 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 blah. But there is something almost, you know, again, to go back to what Dimitri was saying, almost seductive on this overall idea, I find.
Yeah, I agree, Pedro. And that's a fine note for closing out, because we have skimmed the surface of the article. It's very, got a very rich set of ideas. And I think Pedro was right to focus on this. There's some very positive aspects to this. It's not all, you know, they made this mistake or it goes too far here and it's all one best way. And I think their aim, they had a noble aim, and you can judge for yourself by reading the text and listen to our conversations, whether you think we're onto something, or you might have a different idea. And if you do, please send us a note, because we love to get feedback from our listeners. And that's all for part 3 of episode 48. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and found it valuable. If so, please tell your friends, colleagues, and students who may be interested in these topics about the podcast. You can also give us feedback, which we'd love to receive, via Twitter, Facebook, or our website, which is where you can also subscribe to our newsletter. Please join us next time here on Talking About Organizations.